The Healthy Insights podcast features conversations with the leading minds in the field of health and well-being. Our hope is for you to gain insights, learn something new, and discover some valuable takeaways from our fascinating group of guests. Host Jim Narum is a respected leader with over 30 years of experience in the employee health and well-being field. The Healthy Insights podcast is brought to you by Asset Health, a comprehensive health and well-being services and technology provider. Asset Health's approach is based on actively cultivating the idea that your health is your most valuable asset.
Hello and welcome. This is Jim Narum, your host of the Healthy Insights podcast. Today's guest is Colin Milner, the founder and chief executive officer of the International Council on Active Aging, also known as ICAA, based in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Colin has been the CEO of ICAA for the past 20 years. Colin is very passionate about helping older adults age well, active aging housing for middle-income older adults, advocating for a more personalized understanding of older adult needs as consumers, and tapping into what he sees is the underutilized potential of older adults in meeting the labor needs of businesses. Colin has been recognized as one of Canada's top 100 health influencers, one of who's who in the U.S. fitness club industry, and achieved the CanFit Pro Lifetime Achievement Award. He is also part of the prestigious World Economic Forum's Global Agenda Council Circle. Colin, welcome. Thanks for being a guest on the podcast.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here, and thank you very much for inviting me.
I'm kind of in the later stage of my career, and so the topic that we're going to be talking about of active aging is something that I'm particularly looking forward to.
Well, it's a topic, as you know, near and dear to my heart, and is sometimes misunderstood by others. So it's a wonderful opportunity to share my passion with you.
Absolutely. Well, and I first met you about 20 years ago. You were the vice president of sales and marketing for Kaiser Corporation, which sells exercise equipment. And after your time at Kaiser, you founded the International Council on Active Aging and have been its CEO for the last 20 years. Tell us a little bit about your organization.
Well, the ICAA basically came from frustration that nobody was doing what we are doing today. And when I was with Kaiser, I kept visiting organizations, and their comment was, well, we would really be interested in working with the older population, but we're not sure how, or we're working with the older population, but we're not sure what to do. So I left Kaiser and actually went to IDEA as their president with the goal of creating something that would be exciting and interesting to address those issues. Long story short, they were interested in me, but not that concept. So on my 40th birthday, I resigned. And on my drive back from San Diego to Vancouver, I came up with the concept of the International Council on Active Aging. And the goal is very simple, Jim, and that is to help change the way we age. And to change the way we age, I believe we actually need to change just that, the way we age. We need to be healthier, longer, so that we can live better. And what ICAA does is it supports 10,000 organizations in 57 different countries to help their customers achieve that. And we provide education, information, resources, tools, and training to enable them to do that.
So tell us some of the facts about the aging population and some of the implications that our listeners may or may not be aware of.
Well, the reality is you can run, but you can't hide. We all age. And and the question is, how well do we age? And what we know today is that compared to 30 years ago, we are aging better than we were previously. We have greater capacity when it comes to things like walking speed, strength, you know, mental capacity, and so forth. And a lot of it's just access to things to help us do that. If you remember, about 25 years ago or so, there was a big report that came out of Tufts University that said, hey, doesn't matter how old you are, you can reverse some of your strength loss, even if you're in a nursing home and you're in your 90s within a 10 to 12 week period. Today, we're talking about people jumping over bars and in national senior games. So I think the biggest thing that we have learned over that period of time is the level of potential that we have. We never used to think that we had that, or those who thought that they had that were very few. Now it's commonplace to see people doing things that were once thought for the young. And the reality is from a consumer standpoint, the older population, people over 50, can you imagine that we talk about people over 50 as older? But what the heck? People 50 plus actually have 70% of the disposable income. So you have a marketplace of individuals who have this untapped potential, who are wanting to tap it, and who have the resources to do that. A lot of organizations just simply need to embrace that possibility and that opportunity. And that, unfortunately, is still lacking. It is changing, but it is still lacking. I think the greatest opportunity that we have is to help individuals to expand their health span. And by doing so, there's a report that just came out from David Sinclair to divert for 2 seconds that showed if we can help individuals expand their health span by just 2.6 years, that we would actually create an $18 trillion windfall. So we have people that have this potential that now we want to expand our health span, and they have the resources to spend on the products and services to help them do that. And that really, in a nutshell, is the opportunity.
I want to go back to that, because the one thing that you said, the 50 plus market, which both you and I are in, now accounts for 70% of disposable income. And that number has grown significantly over the past 20 years. So if I'm an employer, or a company that is listening to this, you know, what are the real implications that are like aha moments related to that?
Well, I think the implications for an employer is just like the population, and that is that you need to realize there is a diverse workforce out there. Yes, you have older workers, but it's not about helping them to retire earlier. It's about empowering them to work later, because we have a lot more capabilities than what we used to think. The sad state, though, is that very few employers have a strategy in place for enabling that to happen. The other part of that is to think about the fact that the younger population growth in the numbers is relatively flat over the next 10 decades. So if you look at that from an employer standpoint, your pool of young employees is relatively flat as well. Your growth with the older population, and that's what you're seeing now, is people are looking for the older population to fill a lot of jobs that the younger population used to. You see places like McDonald's that are now using older adults on the front line. You know, my only caveat there is a lot of immense experience. And I would hate to think that we relegate older adults to the minimum wage jobs, mm-hmm. because we are trying to fill those and we don't look at what they can bring to the workforce as a whole, because there's experience, there's balance, there's a lot of emotional intelligence and wisdom that a lot of the younger population hasn't gathered yet throughout their life. And there's also the ability to mentor both ways, you know, mentoring the younger population and also the younger population teaching us some of the things that we need to know, such as technology. But the older population is rapidly gaining in their knowledge on technology. You got to remember the baby boomers, as an example, were the ones who actually brought all of this computer science, if you remember that term, right, from high school and junior high, to the forefront.
I agree with that. So talk about some active aging trends of aging well. I know that's a term that you've used. You know, what are things that remain constant and from a trend standpoint, and what are things that have changed in recent years?
Let's start with what has changed. And what has changed is, to a certain degree, attitudes. Attitudes of doing things for versus having people do for themselves. Autonomy is a key factor as you age, and no one wants to have people do things for them, such as care and all of these other elements. So I think one of the big opportunities is to enable people, whether it's through technology or services, to do things for themselves. As an example, to monitor our own health and well-being, we now have things like wearables, all different kinds of wearables. You have your basic wearables like your Apple Watch or your Fitbits, but you also have wearables now that you can monitor things like diabetes or glucose levels and all of these different things that you never used to be able to do. And then, you know, that gives you the ability to track and look at making adjustments to what you're doing to better ensure that your health and well-being is consistent. You know, the other part of all of that is you think about the older population, and I think about one word, and that is more. There's more people that have more needs, more diverse needs. There's more diversity in the population. So the aspect of providing solutions for that diversity becomes crucial. Think about TV. There used to be just the big three or four TV stations. Now you have hundreds of TV stations and they're very specialized. I think you're going to see that with the older population as well. And that is personalized health and wellness solutions is a prime example of that. It's not about the one size fits all, because we know that as we age, no two people age the exact same way or at the exact same rate. So the need for personalized solutions is front and center. So the question then is, how do you deliver that? What's the opportunity around that? Do you use genetic, you know, or DNA testing to provide some guidelines around that? Do you use blood tests? Do you use, you know, watch like the Apple or the Fitbit just for tracking? Do you use little tools like the oxygen cuffs and all of this kind of stuff? So I think, you know, some of the opportunities really are around the person, managing the health data and personalizing the services that they will have offered to them because of that health data.
The concept of retirement is also changing.
Of what? You know,
I know. I know.
Retirement? Do we still do that?
Well, people's idea of sitting in the lazy boy when they get done working and just kind of putzing around and doing that, that's kind of an outdated concept. There's not many people that I know that are looking to do that anymore.
No, that's my parents' generation and the generations before then. You know, it used to be that, of course, you're born, you're educated for whatever period of time, you go into the workforce, you retire, you die, and that's it. Now, there are many more stages to that. You may be in the education process for a lot longer and at different times throughout your life, such as going back to university, as we're seeing happening now in your 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, or even 80s. You are caregiving for not just your children, but your parents or your children's children much later on in life. There's the potential now for taking a sabbatical in your 40s or 50s and then coming back and continuing to work. There's phasing your retirement, if we can still use that word. I would like to find a new word. People have said refirement and all these different things. You know, it's just basically a new stage of life where we're looking to experience life differently. But the point is that there are all of these new stages. We're working longer and in ways we're working shorter. So there is no one size fits all, but many different stages are also, to your question earlier, are also creating the need for solutions, which is one of the trends that is driving new opportunities and new businesses, such as how do I educate an older workforce and reskill them?
Yeah, well, and I live in Minnesota, as you know, and one of the things that Minnesota University System offers, if you're 62 and over, you can take any class for no credit, for no cost. And, you know, if you take a course for credit, it's like $10 a credit hour. And I've done that. And not as many people know that as should. You know, there's people that go back to college to take a course on something that they've always wanted to do, but never have had the opportunity to do that and keep fresh and engaged and energized in learning new things.
Well, learning a new skill, if all of a sudden I've been a blue collar worker, working on the floor in a manufacturing plant and my body is kind of given out a little bit and now I want to reskill myself so I can do something that requires a completely different skill set, because now I'm retiring or being asked to retire either way in my late 50s, early 60s, but I am going to be living hopefully much longer. The reality is that my dad died 3 years ago. And one of the things I did was that I went back to see how many people, you know, were able to reach his age. And where I was going with my point was in 1933, which is when he was born, 42% of the population that was born there is still alive. They were 85 and above. So as we talk about retirement and we reskilling, if 42% of the population is at least 85, and when you reach that age, you have at least another 6 years or more on average in you, which it takes you into the 90s, and you're in your mid 50s to 60s, you got a third of your life in front of you, and the workforce needs to understand that. And we as individuals need to understand that and find ways to maximize the opportunities to stay engaged. That's what it's all about, being engaged in life and in society.
One of the other things that a trend that I've seen too is that there's there's a lot of people that are interested in moving to communities that are a lot more active. And have you seen that trend as well?
Yeah, it's really about the lifestyle. What kind of lifestyle you want? And people want to move into communities that can provide the lifestyle that they seek. You know, one of the major things that people are looking for is social engagement. If I'm living at home and I have this big house and maybe I'm a single person in my 60s or 70s, and I don't want to be just walking around the house all day long speaking to myself, then moving into a community is actually a good thing. You can build new social connections. You can invite your friends in. And yes, the reality is that is a growth area, as is also the growth area of helping people to downsize, incentivizing people to downsize so that they can actually find a lifestyle that meets what they're looking for. And at the same time, making the environments that they move into appropriate so that they can age in place or live in place throughout the rest of their life if they choose to stay at home, which most people still do. A few years ago, AARP's number was 90%. That number has now changed to about 73% of the population say that they would prefer to age in place or live in place. And I think that that number is going to continue to go down as properties and property owners begin to provide better options for us to move into. I mean, really, in an ideal world, the kind of environment that you'd move into is no different than any other environment that you'd move into. It just so happens to be for people 55 plus because of the tax breaks, but you are still intergenerational and have this immense flurry of different amenities available.
Okay, so what's your passion right now? What are the top things, the top initiatives that you're working on?
Well, one of the funny you mentioned about the housing part of things, one of our initiatives is to help our members who are mostly property owners, managers, developers of senior living communities actually address the middle income market, because many of the current communities are either at the high end or affordable housing. And left out of all of this is the average person, the person in the middle income. So one of the things we're working on is, what does that model look like? What services are available? What kind of property is built? You know, what is the atmosphere in that property? What how does it look? It's not going to be overly ornate like some of the current communities that you maybe have to pay an entrance fee into, like a CCRC, a large entrance fee, but it will be a lot more basic. But then again, basic is what we can afford at that stage, but the services will still be there to offer you the lifestyle. It may be delivered differently, some of it online, some of it built into the community with other services from the outside community coming in, such as a, you know, a spa, and maybe that spa is open to the outside public. So that's one of the key ones. Right now, the models that are being offered ignores that market for the most part. The other really, really exciting thing on my end is focusing on what I mentioned earlier, and that is person-centered. It's all about the person nowadays. Before, years ago, it used to be about the organization. This is what the organization offers, and you come in and you do what we tell you. Now, it's the other way. Our organization is here to serve you, and we help you fill your aspirations. That is a major shift in healthcare, in wellness, in the development of any and every product moving forward. The last one is an ongoing challenge, and that is getting organizations to understand, hey, beyond the money that older adults have, these are people who are looking for solutions and different solutions. We're not looking for what our parents had. We're looking for new products and services, and there's an immense opportunity. Question is, do you step up and embrace that opportunity?
So this is something I ask all of my guests is, so what would you say are the top three takeaways from this episode that our listeners should remember?
Well, I think one is that there is an immense population out there that a lot of times gets neglected. And the spoils of war, as they say, go to those who are the victors, and the victors are those who actually embrace the older population. One out of every $2 spent is in the hands of individuals 50 plus. One out of every two people over the age of 18 are 50 plus. So you are leaving on the table 50% of the population, and 50% of the money spent, and 70% of the potential money to be spent if you do not pay attention to the 50 plus population. So one is to not only realize that there's an incredible opportunity, but to realize that the opportunity is different. The opportunity is meeting their needs and not your needs. Number two is, as I have mentioned a couple of times, focus on the person. Look at how you can help people to achieve their aspirations, whatever that is, and use person-centered medicine, person-centered wellness, and person-centered technology, and person-centered solutions to personalize the products and services to meet their needs. Number three is really to change our mindset. You know, our mindset, if you look at most advertising, is still dated when it comes to older adults, or we're trying to be too cute and we are portraying them as nothing but youngsters in older skin. And the reality is we are experienced individuals who are more sophisticated than you would like to think as a marketer, and to realize that we just simply want to be heard, and that the way we want to be heard is different. So become a student of the older population so that you can address our needs from a marketing standpoint. And coming back to number one, the spoils of war will be there for you to do so.
This has been fabulous. I've known you for a long time. I'm definitely an advocate of what you're working on. And in that stage of my professional career and life as well. So it's of particular interest to me as well. But I thank you for being a guest. It was great to catch up with you, and wish you all the best.
Well, I appreciate that. And I hope, like all of us out there, Jim, that you extend your health span, and that you have a good future in front of you. Thank you for inviting me to be on your show.
Thanks, Colin.
Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app or player. We also encourage you to rate this podcast. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.